everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. We are done with the 2018 French Open, but we will put a bow on it with my lovely colleague, Chanda Rubin. You all know Chanda. She was a former top 10 player, a strong doubles player, retired perhaps prematurely on account of injury, but one of the truly lovely people in the sport. You'll get a sense of why she is a rising star in tennis media. Nice conversation. Both of us are a little jet lagged. Not so bad going east to west. But here's half an hour with the lovely, the talented Chanda Rubin. You ready to talk tennis?
Yeah, let's talk a little tennis.
When'd you get back?
Yesterday night evening.
An experienced traveler like you, you're probably not so jet lagged, right?
Well, I had a little trouble. You know, I still have my nights where I don't sleep all the way through on after a long trip overseas. So I kind of woke up early, but I have a baby, so it's not actually bad.
I was going to say, at least you don't have a young child that could disrupt your sleep.
Right.
So where'd you learn to dance like that? You got some moves.
You know, I'm like probably the worst dancer in my family.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I have big shoes to try to live up to, but I do my best.
Oh man, good for
the
Rubens.
And I have a good time with it.
So let's put a bow on the French. Good tournament overall. I don't know what struck you.
Yeah, I thought it was an excellent tournament overall. I really enjoyed some of the really competitive matches. Obviously, all the way through the second week, we had a number of really competitive, tough contests. I mean, the sort of unexpected surprise with Checanato getting through, and that was a really good match with Team. So some of those sort of unexpected, the women's final I thought was fabulous. And, you know, going three sets and sort of going the distance, you know, it's not often we get a great final that goes the distance. So I was very pleased and happy with that. And of course, Rafa, I mean, it's unbelievable being able to win number 11. So you got to throw that in. I'm sorry?
11 is a big number.
I can't even fathom winning a tournament 11 times, let alone a Grand Slam. So it defies, you know, sort of all expectations, but we sort of did expect him to win, which that was the crazy part, and he did it. So I thought it was an excellent 2 weeks.
People are like, why is he crying? And I said, I'll tell you why he's crying, because the best he could possibly do at these events is meet expectation. There's nothing
right.
He can do that will be like, he's either going to fulfill expectation or leave disappointed. There's like nowhere to go but across.
And then obviously he is one of the greatest players and certainly of this generation, but how does he keep meeting expectations with everything that's on the line, with all the pressure, everything at stake, coming back from the physical challenges that he's had with his knee? And you really wondered if he'd get back to the top level, and he's even surpassed that. So, I mean, it's phenomenal.
I'm watching the women's final, and I'm thinking, as a fan here, not as a journalist, but as a fan, I'm thinking, if Sloan doesn't win, then she says, that was a disappointing result. I would love to have had a second major, but, you know, hey, it's good effort, good week. If Halep doesn't win, it's going to be crushing. I could not bring myself, you know, I don't know how fans process matches like that. But it was weird to me to watch a match knowing that it was so kind of asymmetrical, that if Halep loses, she's devastated. If Sloan loses, I'll get him next time.
It wasn't a very equal sort of the risk to reward
right.
for each player, I guess, if, for lack of a better analogy. I mean, there was so much more at stake for Halep. And you know, I kind of felt that when Sloan won the first set and was up 2-0, it was sort of like, okay, this is going to be devastating. Like, you're happy for Sloan because she's playing well, playing great tennis, and if she'd kept it up, she would have absolutely deserved to win. And that would have been wonderful. But you just, I started at least feeling the, oh no, like what is Halep going to do if
exactly.
she can't get through this? And I just remember thinking that because I was calling the match for radio. I remember thinking that at that moment. It was the oddest thing. So definitely completely unequal in terms of sort of what each player's challenges were and what they faced going in. But, I mean, what an effort for Halep to actually turn that around, especially when you consider some of the matches she's had where she's sort of gone away.
Right.
And she didn't, under the biggest of circumstances, with the most at stake. And she had to have been thinking, like, not again.
Exactly.
But she still managed to you know, just hang in there, you know, be opportunistic and pull through. So it was pretty phenomenal kind of watching that process.
Did you notice the, I thought, I mean, you always get a little of this, but I thought it was uncommon, the outpouring of congratulations she got from other players. I mean, you know, she'd barely shaken Sloane Stephens' hand, and already, you know, Kvitova had a very nice tweet, and then it was this onslaught. I can't remember a player winning, but that isn't Roger or Rafa, winning a major and getting that kind of instant feedback from their peers.
Yeah, it's hard to think of anyone sort of getting that type of reception afterwards. I think so many players just felt her pain, you know, I mean, and as a player, you're dealing in your own world and your own disappointment and what you're trying to do, what you're trying to accomplish. So, you know, it's hard to really put yourself in another player's shoes, but with all of the disappointment she's had, how close she's been the number one player now, finished the year there. She's been playing solidly there. And you just felt all of these sort of, you know, just misses. Players really started to feel that for her, which is unbelievable to kind of bring players into that space and to have them really happy, genuinely happy for another player when they finally overcome and they kind of get through what is the essence of sport. And that's just picking yourself up and getting back out and trying again and putting it all on the line each time. And I thought it was pretty special.
I like that. Is she going to put it off? You gonna put it together at Wimbledon? I was just looking at the odds. You want to guess who? You want to guess who number one with the odds makers is?
Wow. Let me see.
I always say with the odds makers too, but you know, I mean, it's really just this is reflective of what people are betting on, right? It's not like a guy's making this up. I mean, so
I can't. Would it be somebody like Muguruza or?
That's what I would guess.
I can't.
It's Serena and Kvitova are tied right now.
For number one?
With the odds makers. Yeah, yeah.
Six for the odds makers?
6-1
wow.
For both. I got 6-1 Kvitova and Serena. About 7.3-1 Muguruza. Kerber, then Sharapova. Halep's not even on the board.
Wow. I definitely wouldn't. I mean, I can imagine Serena being up there, but I wouldn't have quite gone that. I wouldn't have quite guessed that, but, you know, she's Serena.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Can you say?
So I got five topics for you. Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 how much you care about them and what your strong feelings are. On-court coaching, 1 to 10. Do you care or no big deal?
Like care as in I don't like it or I love it.
Yeah, exactly. You have a passionate take. You have a hot take.
I don't like it. I don't like. I wish that would be one thing they would get rid of.
Grunted.
So that, where would that put it on the scale?
I'd say.
Tell me again.
Let's say that's a 10. I'm totally with you, but good for you. What about grunting?
I'm about a 7. I'm about a 7. When I'm watching tennis, I'm probably more like an 8.
Wow.
But overall, 6 or 7.
Mademoiselle Rubin, I didn't take you for that. best of 3 versus best of 5.
That's a good one. I'm kind of like a 5. I can go either way. I can go either way. I mean, there are times when I think 2 out of 3 would be enough, but then you have an epic and it sort of sways me sort of the other side of the argument. So I could go either way, maybe a five.
Roger Federer potentially leaving Nike.
Ooh.
Jamie's shaking her head. Is there news on that? Is that
not happening? I didn't even consider that possibility.
I'm telling you, it's one of these things where, with the possible exception of Rafa winning 11 titles, this Roger Federer clothing contract is the story of the week. I mean, I've never seen. It's been a long time since I've seen.
I had
a topic
not considered that. Could he possibly leave? Is that even a possibility?
No,
I mean, he has a lifetime contract with Wilson, right? So that's
right.
He doesn't have anything like that with Nike.
No, I mean, you know, honestly, I don't know who, I should know this offhand and I don't, who your contracts were with, but I feel like that we go through this all the time, not just in tennis, but with, you know, the sports marketers want the next big thing and they want young talent.
That's
and the
true.
Veteran
yeah.
athlete says, hey, wait a second, doesn't my brand mean anything to you? And we,
exactly.
This is an old dynamic.
Well, it's like with Halep and Adidas. I mean, that sort of happened, and it was like, okay, she's like one in the world, you know, it didn't quite compute, but I guess they sort of calculated it
and
came
now,
up with the value, and it didn't match. So
it's funny. I was thinking Nike's probably, Nike's paying some nice bonuses in their very first Grand Slam with Halep, but I suspect they're happy to do it.
Right. I mean, they're getting the bang for the buck.
Exactly.
And so it works.
So I wanted to find your career high ranking. You know what your career high ranking was, by the way?
I do know.
You do know. Six, right?
Yes. Six.
Good for you. So I'm looking at your, because sometimes tennis websites don't have the functionality they should. I went first to Wikipedia, where I did realize that your career high ranking was six.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. That's strong. But I also saw this in your bio. Ruben is very private about her personal life.
That's in my bio?
That's in your bio. That's right there on your Wikipedia page.
How did that get in my bio?
You got to, you can fix your Wikipedia entry. But I'm thinking, you came of age at a time when, this was right when I first started covering tennis. And it was... The Williams sisters were coming on the scene, and Hingis and Kournikova, and we were still sort of reeling from Steffi had just retired. We were reeling from the Selis tragedy still, but it was a time when women's
Correct.
Tennis was very public. And I'm curious how someone who, according to Wikipedia, is very private about her personal life. How did you sort of handle the culture of the time?
Well, I mean, I was sort of under the radar for all of the reasons you just named. I mean, you're talking Hall of Fame players and you know, their retirements and with Monica. And then right when I sort of came out and made my big push, Venus and Serena weren't far behind. And, of course, they completely changed the landscape. So there are a number of things, I think, that sort of kept me a little more under the radar. And... a few injuries early on, so I didn't quite stay out there continuously. I had some stops and starts. But I think it was also just before sort of the age of Twitter, where you would not have been able to stay very private. So it was just, I think, sort of the calm before the storm when I was sort of came up and came out there, and nobody really bothered with me. Like, I was not that interesting.
Oh, stop. You're plenty interesting.
So,
you just didn't draw attention to yourself. You were fine with that, right? I mean, I never got the sense that you were like, hey, wait a second, I want to be in the photo shoot. Where's my space?
Right. And, I didn't. I was pretty focused on my tennis. I didn't go through all the dating and all of that. I mean, now it's sort of more commonplace. And, it's as much the tennis as it is sort of the personal red carpet type of stuff, and who's dating who, who's the power couple. And I wasn't into all of that at all. So I think it was just a combination of those things that sort of kept me just handling my business and going about it my way. And, it works for me.
You got to do you. That's why we love you. No, I mean, I mean, do you, we often say that, I was thinking about this because we often say this about the contemporaries of Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. Oh, I bet they wished they played at a different time, and it's sort of this throwaway line.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think about playing in a different era? You happy to play when you played? Do you wonder what it would be like to play today? How do you feel about yourself in relation to your sort of tennis era?
No, I've thought about it, of course. You know, maybe a lot of players have, I don't know. But I have thought about if I played in a different era, if I played sort of with the players now and, you know, just obviously looking at the money. I mean, how it's increased, like, whoa, how would that sort of compare? You know, so I have had those kinds of thoughts. But really, I do not regret playing when I did. And I'm actually very happy that I was able to play at the time I did, where I overlapped maybe some different generations of like some of the great Hall of Fame players. I mean, you know, if you got to the top 10, you know, you were right behind 3, 4, 5 Hall of Fame players.
Right.
No question, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I just feel privileged to have played, you know, players like Steffi and Monica. Didn't play them as many times, but to have played them and gone up against them, to Arantxa Sanchez, to Sabatini. I mean, just the list goes on. And then to have overlapped into with Capriati and Lindsay and then Venus and Serena. And I mean, the list keeps going. And I can say I played those players, practiced with them, a mutual respect. And for me, that's enough. I mean, if you have the respect of your peers and these are peers that are pretty high level, you know, I can definitely, you know, feel good about that. And that's enough for me. And that's how I went about my career. And I'm good with it.
Close friends? Who are you friends with?
Closest friends, I would say, I mean, Lindsay and I are still friends. We were friends like early, so we were probably the closest when we first came out.
She talks bad about you behind your back.
Yeah, you know, that happens. You know, I don't hold it against her.
And
you know, to Mary Jo Fernandez, and that's sort of when we were playing, and then it went to a number of the European players. Barbara Schett is still a really good friend. Sandrine Testud, who I played doubles with, and so now we sort of still see each other occasionally when we're at the slams. You know, they're maybe playing in the Legends, we play together. You know, they're commentating, some of them as well. So those would be a few of some of my better friends that we still are friends now and we keep in contact. So it's kind of nice when you can, you know, have those sort of relationships and keep them going through your retirement.
You know what I always thought is one of the great underrated stories in sports? If I told you in the late 90s, when you were number 6 in the world, one day Steffi Graf's going to be married to Andre Agassi.
I would have said you were crazy. What? They don't even match. How is that possible? Like, they seem like completely different personalities, but I guess it worked.
And
it's funny, when we saw Sandrine Testud and I, when we played the finals of the doubles, I think it was in New York at the U.S. Open, we saw them out, we think, on their first date.
Oh, man.
Steffi and Andre. And it was like, whoa. You know, and it was all very quiet. And it was super crazy. And, of course, now years later, you know, all of it is history. But, I mean, it's fascinating to think about how opposites, perhaps maybe me seeing them as opposites and maybe lots of people seeing them as opposites, but how that can attract and work. It's
See, now
crazy.
Someone would have put that on Instagram and what are they doing out together?
Now, that would have been huge. But, you know, we didn't take a picture. We didn't put that out there. But it was sort of cool to have a glimpse of that, just a little bit of insight as into these, you know, Hall of Fame players, I mean, icons at that point. And to just see them quietly having dinner and, you know, talking and clearly starting something. So I remember that.
But I also think they have such a conventional life. I mean, it's very normal, and they go to their kids' sporting events, and you talk to them about their kids, and you know they're not.
Yeah,
it's seems
kind of
like
shocking.
They've really
yeah.
No, but they really sort of seem to embrace conventional living conventionally, and not the celebrity life. And I was thinking, not unlike a tennis player who returns to Lafayette, Louisiana. That'd be you. You're still living in L.A.
Yeah.
as we say.
Yeah.
I made that dad joke the other day, right?
Yes, yes. The other LA, I think you called it.
Yeah. The LA with better traffic.
Definitely that.
Tell us about life in Louisiana.
You know, it's quiet. I mean, it's, you know, Lafayette, where I live, is sort of, it's mid-size, obviously, compared to a big city or, you know, the bigger cities like Baton Rouge and New Orleans even. But it has a completely different feel. It's family-oriented. You know, people sort of like to get together, have a good time, have their drinks. You got to have a little alcohol and some good food. That's a requirement. But it's the mix between really having a good time and the party lifestyle, but still being very family-oriented. So it's a very cool mix, and with all of my family being around this area, I mean, it works. You know, and I have to travel anyway for work, so Lafayette is as good a place as any to have as my base still.
How do you, it's Cajun country or no?
It is. It is in the heart of it. Yeah, Southwest Louisiana.
I would think of it's between Baton Rouge and Lake Charles, right?
It is. It is. Probably not quite equidistant, a little further going to Lake Charles. Baton Rouge is only about 50 minutes across the bridge. So you're kind of central. It's only 2 hours from New Orleans. So that's an easy weekend trip. We'll go to, you know, football games sometimes or basketball games, and we'll make a weekend of it. Saints, I mean, that's huge. That's a religion around here too. So it's nice to kind of have, you know, some of that in the area, not very far away, easily accessible. So it's kind of a good spot, good middle ground. And then Houston's only about 3 hours, and go catch an improv, which my husband and I will do sometimes, or, you know, go, you know, out to a couple of spots. And, you know, so it's a nice little mix sort of being in this little location.
Sounds like good living. It sounds like not the easiest place maybe to get in and out of, but
that is the only thing. You got to connect somewhere. And I have three options. I can go through Houston, Dallas, or Atlanta.
That's your local airport.
Yes.
What's your connection to tennis these days, apart from the work you do at Tennis Channel?
Yeah, that's my primary connection. I mean, I've been doing television commentating pretty much since I've retired. I've done it to various degrees because when I retired, I sort of got into some different things as well. I started really focusing on real estate and the real estate company that I had and commercial property. And so that became a focus. I got my real estate license. So, you know, I've had, you know, some different things I've been doing outside of tennis, and I had the freedom to do that when I retired. So it was nice to just explore, you know, some different areas. But it's great to really still stay connected to the game and connected to the sport. You know, for a minute when you retire, you've kind of done it so single-mindedly, you right. want to kind of break from it. It's like, okay, I don't want to think about tennis anymore for a while. But then as I got a little further away from retirement, it was nice to really be drawn back in and to have that connection and still be able to sort of get right back in it. And once you do, you sort of got to be in it the whole year. So that's kind of where I am now. And it's just managing the time with the family, with the baby. But I really enjoy it. I bring her with me as often as I can on trips. Most of my trips to Los Angeles, she's with me. So it's been fun to sort of keep tennis as a focus in my life while all these other things are changing, and just sort of have it change a little bit with my circumstances.
How'd you get so good at TV? Who taught you the tricks and the cadences and everything?
Am I good at it?
You are good at it. I am not merely saying that because you're our guest. You're a rising star.
I appreciate that. No, I mean, it's, you know, it's funny when, you know, I've been doing some form of television now. It's been going on 8-9 years, but I did not do it consistently. And that was always my thing. It's harder to sort of get into the flow, into the rhythm.
It's like tennis.
When, you know, I would, Yeah, exactly. You know, when I would commentate somewhere and then I wouldn't work for 4 or 5 months. You know, so now I'm getting the opportunity to do it more consistently in the Tennis Channel. A family has been great. I'm doing a mix of things from, you know, the studio work to the actual commentating of matches, you know, some on-court interviewing I'm getting into. And it's just nice to kind of stretch myself. And I watch people. I watch everybody. I'm watching you. I'm watching my colleagues. And I'm just trying to take it all in and sort of incorporate it into my style. Because when you're asked to do something, you don't have any training. You know, they don't have a class that you're in and then they say, okay, now go and do the studio work. So you kind of have to just hit the ground running. And that's been my philosophy, is just watch, listen, learn, and then try to be myself and be thoughtful, because that's the other thing that is a real focus for me. Be thoughtful and try to convey something that maybe is coming from a little different perspective. I mean, that's, I think, part of my value.
Right.
And all of our values, you know, the perspective we have. And so I really try, and I can do, I think, a better job of that. And so that would be my goal, to just keep improving in those areas. But it's fun. It is. I mean, and I'm tremendously lucky to have this opportunity.
Oh, that's a great answer. I'll add to that. I think you come across as very real. Some people have, you know, and there's a temptation to sort of say something outrageous and to have a little shtick.
Mm-hmm.
And you come across as who you are.
Appreciate
all right,
that.
People sent us, let's do speed round. People sent a bunch of questions.
Okay.
One sentence answers for all of these. You ready?
One sentence?
Speed round.
Is that what you said? One sentence
answers?
Yeah,
one sentence real quick.
Okay.
So Chanda Rubin, how was your relationship with the Williams earlier on in your career?
My relationship was very good. Practiced with Serena when I needed to, talked in the locker room on occasion. Yeah, it was good.
Richard Williams, as a native of Louisiana, gave you something?
Yes.
It's an icebreaker.
Yes, we've had a few conversations about Louisiana. Absolutely.
Where he's from Shreveport, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a little further. It's further north, so a little different.
Hey,
Richard
Williams and Ryan Harrison, they got a lot in common.
That's right.
Both from Shreveport. Before Jana Novotna passed, did you often think back to that match you played at Roland Garros in 1995?
That match was a pivotal match in my career, and I definitely would remember it on occasion, and in particular when people would bring it up to me, because it was a match that was memorable, and I always appreciated that.
I'd love to hear her thoughts on Monica Seles, the impact of the stabbing on tennis history, especially given that she almost prevented Monica from winning her only slam post-comeback. We'll never forget your amazing quarterfinal win over Arantxa.
Yes.
I'm not sure what the question is, but thoughts on Monica?
Give my thoughts. Well, I mean, she was, you know, what happened to her was unbelievably tragic for tennis and, you know, completely changed the course of history, tennis history. And that's, you know, in a way you would never want to have happen, or you'd never want to have happen again. And I mean, I certainly feel privileged to have been able to play her. I would have liked to have denied her that one slam, but after her comeback. However, the fact that I could be certainly on the court and a part of that history, you know, I appreciate it. And it was one of my most memorable matches of my career as well.
What else do we have here? Second slam. Do you ever wish you were more controversial?
Every now and then I wish I could be.
Really?
But I can't.
Oh, say something offensive.
I mean, I just can't. I mean, it'd be forced. but just if you want to piss me off, then maybe we could try that and talk.
We don't want to do that.
I mean, we could try that. It happens.
You don't
it
have any.
Happened.
Give me your most outrageous opinion. You got to think about that.
Outrageous?
One. I don't know. What's I'm going to make you controversial here, one way or the other.
Yeah, you're forcing this.
Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, or Novak Djokovic. You can only pick one. That will be sure to get you two-thirds, two armies will be after you forever. I won't make you answer that question.
Yeah.
When do we see you again? Are you you'll be back doing Tennis Channel this summer?
I will be. I'll be doing Newport, so that'll be my next TC gig. I'll be there over the weekend, so that should be fun. That should be good, and then I'll do some more stuff over the course of summer. So, heating up.
I don't think you sound so very private about your personal life. I learned about New Orleans. I learned about Louisiana
pretty open,
here.
Right?
We got to work on that.
You know what it was, John? I didn't have a personal life. I just realized that's why it was private.
You were practicing your tennis.
Do anything.
All right. This was a pleasure. I think people will get a sense of why you were so well liked on air. We're going to make you a little more controversial. Next time I see you, we're going to have you're going to come up with something really outrageous to say.
All right. Okay. Let's. That's a good test. I like it.
Go take some time. Go be a mom. Go be a wife.
That's exactly right. I'm going to pick up my baby right now.
See?
So I appreciate it. That's perfect. Perfect timing.
Don't let us keep you. This was a pleasure. We'll do it again.
Okay, it was. Enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks,
friend. Take care.
Take care. All right. Thanks to Chanda for stopping by. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Jamie Lasanti. Jamie, let's talk a little tennis. Missed you over the last 2 weeks. You consumed the French Open 2018 from this side of the ocean. Sometimes you get so close to these events, you lose sight of the real stories. It's funny, too, because other times, like, I hadn't even heard. Did you hear this thing where Serena Williams was asked a question in a press conference that referenced Maria Sharapova and Donald Trump?
I did not.
All right. No, I didn't. Apparently, big story, and it was sort of one of these got picked up by the interwebs. And
I think big story. It depends on, like, what lane of the interwebs you were in. I mean, it really does. It really depends. So
I'm telling you, it's the problem. This is a larger point, but it is a problem with this curated social media world that we live in. You lose all sight and all perspective over what's a big story and what isn't.
It's, exactly.
Roger Federer's clothing contract right now is
big story,
neck and neck with North Korean summits in my universe.
Can you believe it?
The summit or Roger Federer?
Roger Federer.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say.
No, I don't want
denuclearizing the peninsula. I don't know. What's your take on that?
I think it's incredible. When I first saw it, I was like a little bit behind on it. Like, I don't know why I missed it, but I missed it. And then I was like going back and saying, like, this has to be a rumor. Like, I must have missed some, like, ha-ha at the end of it.
The Onion strikes again. No, this was a big story. At the French Open, there were murmurs that this negotiation had sort of gone off the rails and that Roger had been playing without a contract with Nike for weeks and weeks. But that happens from time to time. And especially with Roger not playing, maybe they're just going to cross some T's and dot some I's. And then I was told, no, this is really a fairly tense negotiation. And what I had heard initially was that there were not just sports brands, but fashion brands involved. And, I don't know, you tell me, what's a fashion? Louis Vuitton or Christian Dior? I mean, this went beyond sort of Under Armour, Adidas, Nike, Uniqlo, which doesn't do footwear. But, as we record this on Tuesday, it does seem like there is yet to be official confirmation. You're checking right now?
No.
Is there official confirmation?
There is no official confirmation. I'm checking on a photo because Federer arrived in Stuttgart.
Do you want me to read a text I got from someone who's very much in this world?
Surely.
Why don't I do that since we're...
He arrived wearing a non-Nike, non-Uniqlo t-shirt. It seems to have some design on it.
I'm gonna read to you what a source who's very much entrenched in this world writes.
Go ahead.
While Nike keeps many of their athletes under contract post-retirement, the fee associated with such ambassadorship deals drops precipitously. Nike's a publicly traded enterprise. Their core mantra is performance, and top dollar endorsement deals must be limited to those actually performing on the field or court. Let's compare that to Uniqlo, which does not have the same shareholder scrutiny. But here are the key points. Tokyo's hosting the 2020 Olympics, and Uniqlo has a once-in-a-generation opportunity to promote its brand on a worldwide stage, including perhaps RF playing his final Olympic Games. If Uniqlo can pay Nishikori $20 million, it can certainly afford Roger at $30 million. As RF nears retirement, the media impressions of him will skyrocket, further enhancing their ROI. It's interesting. I mean, I think at some level this is, you know, this happens all the time, right? Nike wants the hot young thing, and they want LeBron James when he's 21 and not when he's 33. And whether it's Agassi or Venus Williams, we see this all the time, that the veteran athlete feels like they're being disrespected, and Nike is sort of interested in playing catch a rising star.
I get that, but my one issue with that message is, so he's not playing anymore because he's suddenly, you know, not part of competition because he decided not to play the French. Like, I mean, where do you gather that he is no longer part of the competition just because he's playing a streamlined schedule and he's sort of nearing retirement?
I don't know how much of this is performance in terms of athletic performance and performance in terms of sales, but these sort of dynamics play out quite frequently with veteran athletes. But I don't know. I guess I've seen this enough. You know, Andre Agassi played his last U.S. Open, I believe, wearing Adidas. Like, it doesn't shock me, but I can tell that I'm in the minority because this was with the possibly Rafa Nadal won his 11th French Open title the day this story broke, and it's been Roger Federer, and what's he going to wear when he appears in Stuttgart?
I think it's most surprising because there's always been a, you know, special Roger Nike relationship. They've always kind of done things with him that they maybe don't do with other athletes. The RF thing obviously is huge and plays a big role there. So there's just a lot more involved. And I think it's just jarring to think of him in anything else, especially as he gets to that point in his career. I mean, on the flip side, wouldn't Nike want to kind of round out their relationship with him, and as he kind of nears retirement? I don't know.
There are business justifications for everything. No, I mean, at some level, it's just the numbers make sense. I'm interested in this RF. I mean, usually what happens when player X, who, I don't know who's an example, throw out an example of an athlete that switched brands. I don't know.
Djokovic switched.
Okay, I was thinking non-tennis. All right, so fine. So Djokovic switches.
Who's a non-tennis athlete?
I don't know. When Derrick Rose switches from Nike to Adidas, I don't know, whatever it is. There's usually sort of a sell-off period. For 6 months, you can get these shoes, and then we're going to stop making the shoes of this athlete, right? Shaquille O'Neal's no longer with Reebok. We're going to have 6 months and get rid of our Shaquille shoes. I don't know what you do, though, when you have this signature brand. I mean, RF line is something completely different than the Andy Roddick Reebok shoe. But anyway, it's I guess we'll see what he shows up wearing. I mean, my one take on this is Japanese brand that will have a presence, even if they're not an official sponsor, they will have a presence at the 2020 Games. I think it's natural to wonder if Federer's availability 2 summers from now figures into this. Hmm. Thoughts? You have any?
Yeah, I mean, it's a gamble, isn't it?
Well, or else maybe best efforts have been made to keep playing for 2 more years and appear in Tokyo. We shall see. All of this is speculation. All right, let's go back to the actual Grand Slam tournament that ended fewer than 48 hours ago. Enough of this apparel nonsense. What else struck you watching from here?
I really, really enjoyed the women's final.
Great match,
my
right?
My Saturday was much better than my Sunday.
Tennis-wise.
Yes, great match. Sloane won the first set. I was very torn. I didn't know what to think. Because on one side of me, I got called unpatriotic in the office for my pick. So I was a little...
In this office? We're more evolved than that.
So I was a little hesitant to say, oh, well, you know, I want this to go to three. But in deep in my heart, I said this. This was a real, you know, brain versus heart kind of thing for me. I really wanted Simona to win it and finally break over that barrier. It was so great to see her just like, I always felt like she just had this tenseness to her, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we were talking about that with Lindsay a few weeks ago. Absolutely.
And I said this, you could really see it melting off of her after, like in those moments afterwards. And I'm sure it continued for the next days after that.
We were saying, too, that this does not go linearly. You lose your first major final, and it's a one. It's sort of exponential. You're 0 for 2, and it's a 4. You're 0 for 3, and it's an 8. I mean, losing four straight finals.
Right.
All of them would have been in three sets after that second set.
And her opponents in those, some of her opponents in those matches were, I mean, like last year's French Open.
A track match with Wozniacki is one thing, but Ostapenko and then.
Right. So I was very happy. The quality of the match was amazing. I thought, Sloane was very gracious. I really enjoyed, in your 50 thoughts, you had one point about Sloane's attitude, the good and the pros and cons of
right,
it, how
right.
it's very good for her. It's been very good for her in the past, year and a half, but that, it will, she'll have a difficult time becoming number one with that attitude, which is sort of the accepting of her, being up and down in her career. So, some days she's going to be playing in Grand Slam finals and some days she's going to lose in, the first round of tournament.
Look at her fall.
Right.
Picking
so
an event. Yeah.
I really like that because I think there was a theme between Sloane and Simona in this final where both of them sort of had that self-possession that you talked about, where Simona was so upfront about her shortcomings and she just sort of said, it is what it is. She laughed about it. And I think when you're able to get to that point and not be so serious, like in any aspect of your life, it's sort of like there's a nice lesson to take from the two of them where in Sloane's case, I'm going to lose in the first round and kind of the ability for her to not let the pressure from, the outside sources get to her and just kind of play in her own lane and, not let that affect her. I think for both of them, it was, it's really impressive.
You got to do you. I got scolded for saying this. I can't remember the word. A complementarian. I was accused of being a complementarian. Not sure what that means. But I think for yet another slam, I think the women's draw sort of carried the day here. And I thought that was the case in Australia. I thought the same thing here. I thought the majority of the matches were, the better matches were the women's matches. I thought the final, God bless Rafa. I think a sporting treasure. I mean, what he's done is just remarkable and will stand the test of time, but that wasn't particularly compelling as a sporting event, especially after that first set. The women's was great. Sloane Stephens, 8-6 in the third with Camilla Giorgi. I mean, even sort of the middle of the tournament matches, I remember the women's much better. I think men's and women's tennis really go well together these days.
Because you have those stars at the top of the
men's
game.
Yeah, you got the Roger Rafa show, and that's awesome. But then you also have these subplots. And anyway, did people miss me when I was gone?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Just kidding.
I missed the company here.
Hey, thanks. no, it's fun coming back to the office. All right, that does it for this week. On that note, we will have another guest next week. Again, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Thanks to our guest, Chanda Rubin. Did you like Chanda?
Loved
She's it. A cool kid. We love kid. She's like, I sound like the guy calling Serena Williams baby. Shanna's a lovely woman. All right. If people want to subscribe, how do they do this again?
I'm not going to go through my, I don't have my step-by-step screenshot pulled up.
iTunes,
have to just go
Stitcher.
On iTunes and click on your podcast app and there's a place to review.
Leave a review.
I have to actually check if people are listening.
We didn't say leave a review for a long time. All right. Anyway, nice talk this week. We will have another guest. I think we're going to get, we will have a Strokes of Genius podcast coming up before Wimbledon as well. Maybe we'll rope in our friend Ted Robinson. But anyway, guys, feel free to keep sending the guest suggestions. They're always appreciated. Thanks for listening. We'll do it again in 7 days. Have a good week, everyone.